This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Hi, Mom. May, the month we celebrate Mother's Day. And you know, there are estimates we spend more than $20 billion buying gifts just for that day. That's about $180 a piece. And yet a mere pittance compared to the sacrifices our moms have made for us. And that is why today on Movies on the Radio, we're dedicating the whole show to mothers. Movie experts Laura Boys and Marcia Gordon join me in the studio. Marcia is a film professor at North Carolina State University. Laura Boys, film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Good to have you here. Mother's films, this is interesting because we can watch moms through the ages, right? I mean, this is a great way to see the way both social order and society and Hollywood thought about motherhood.
Yeah. I mean, perhaps needless to say, families are front and center in film history, telling stories of the way our kind of social world is organized. And so mothers have always played a very significant role on screen, either, well, sometimes in adoring ways and sometimes not so much.
Well, when I was pregnant, one of my friends said to me, no matter what you do, someday your child is going to be in a psychiatrist's office complaining about their mother. So basically, it's like a free pass,
right?
Because there's no guaranteed outcome.
Well, and there was a lot of that in the selection. There was not a lot of June Cleaver films, you know.
Yeah.
June Cleaver moms represented in the selection that we're going to hear today. There was mostly
in a twisted way.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Well, let's face it. I mean, usually films are much more interesting if they are not about the kind of good, ideal, and perfect situation. So that does not make for great drama, great movies. And so I think sometimes the more horrific, the more traumatic. But I would say on the whole, what you know, I'm just scanning the list of selections, that some of these figures, even if they're unconventional or people might look down on them, they also can be very positive and dynamic and energizing and caring just in their own way.
Well, and sometimes in the same movie. Our first pick is yours, Marcia, the Oscar-winning drama Now Voyager.
So if there were to be one genre with which you could kind of focus your energies to think about mothers, it would be the melodrama. And melodramas were, of course, very popular in the time period that this film came out. And this is a Warner Brothers film starring Bette Davis as Charlotte Vale. And she begins the film really this kind of traumatized, awkward, frumpy young woman who has been penalized and kind of stuck, locked in a room in some ways by her terrible, terrible mother, who we'll hear in this first clip.
Well, it's as I said, isn't it? Just nonsense.
She is most seriously ill.
Charlotte is?
Thanks to you.
Did you say?
My dear Mrs. Vale, if you had deliberately and maliciously planned to destroy your daughter's life, you couldn't have done it more completely.
How? By having exercised a mother's rights?
A mother's rights, twaddle. A child has rights. A person has rights. To discover her own mistakes, to make her own way, to grow and blossom in her own particular soil.
Are we getting into botany, Doctor?
So this is, the Boston mother who has these notions about how she wants her daughter to live her life and care for her and all of these things. And so luckily, Dr. Jackwith whisks her off to this sanitarium where she can blossom, and she goes on a cruise and she meets a man, but he's married and has these two children. And so they have this amazing experience and then go back into their lives. And what happens full circle is that now Charlotte Vale, who is now this gorgeous Bette Davis, ends up kind of mothering one of Jerry, the man who she cannot be with, one of his children, his daughter, who is very much like she was when she was a child. So she becomes this kind of surrogate.
Tell me, what's the matter?
I'm ugly and mean, and nobody likes me.
Tina, you?
I'm not pretty in the least. You know I'm not.
Well, whoever wants that kind of prettiness, Tina? There's something else you can have if you earn it. A kind of beauty.
What kind?
Something that has nothing to do with your face. A light that shines from inside you because you're a nice person. Think about it, and someday you'll know I'm right.
That's a clip from the 1942 drama Now Voyager.
And that advice is all fine and well, although, of course, both of them are transformed from these ugly ducklings into these beautiful women. But In the vein of melodrama films, this is about self-sacrifice, and there is this kind of masochistic element to the film where the female character is giving up so much in order to take on this role. But I love this one. There's a bunch of melodramas. Stella Dallas is
by
another
the same
one.
Author.
Yeah, by the same author, but with Barbara Stanwyck, that just knock me out of my.
And never underestimate the power of the makeover. Because Charlotte ends up with what is one of my all-time favorite Hollywood wardrobes designed by Ori Kelly. And when she has her first dinner out on the cruise with her new pompadour hairdo and her makeup and all that, she's wearing a cape with a sequin pattern of butterflies on it as if she's just come out of the cocoon. And it's such a wonderful symbolism of what her transformation has been.
And yet it's borrowed, so it has this little note on the back of it that someone has written about when to wear it because she's not quite fully out of the chrysalis.
And you can see that cape in the Smithsonian, in fact.
Hmm.
Well, a lot of the moms are out of the mold. Certainly that's the case for Auntie Mame.
Hi, my name is Liz Kelly, and I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. And my favorite mom movie is called Auntie Mame from the 1950s. She's an eccentric character who's kind of a atypical non-mom figure. I remember anytime I couldn't sleep, I would crawl out of my room, and my mom would be knitting and watching these kind of classic movies. And this one really captured my imagination as it was everything that wasn't in my life. An alternative kind of mom figure.
I'm your Auntie Mae!
Would you care for an olive? Auntie Mame says olives take up too much room in such a little glass.
Why, Mr. Babcock, what an honor it is to have you in our little home. Though I wonder if it does make the best first impression on a sensitive young mind to see you drinking during business hours.
But he...
Oh, no, don't you worry. I won't breathe a word to the Knickerbocker Bank.
Now, just one minute. Where did this boy learn to mix it?
Mr. Babcock, knowledge is power.
Is the English lady sick, Auntie Mame?
Oh, she's not English, darling. She's from Pittsburgh.
She sounded English.
Well, when you're from Pittsburgh, you have to do something. Live! That's the message.
Live?
Yes, life is a banquet, and most poor suckers are starving to death. Now, come on, Agnes, live!
1958 film Auntie Mame, starring Rosalind Russell, received two Golden Globes and six Oscar nominations.
I love the first three quarters of Auntie Mame, and then when the little boy grows up and turns into such judgmental prig, I find it to be supremely annoying. And it's also straight washing because the author of Auntie Mame was married and had children, but he was also gay, and I'm sure they wanted to make sure there was no intimation of that at all in the many popular adaptations of this particular story.
Well, this is, as with Now Voyager, one of the films we'll be talking about today, where there is this, as Liz put it, the alternative mother figure, and those are really interesting to me. These kind of, whether it's by orphan, or, you know, the child is orphaned, as is the case in Auntie Mame, or just the real mother is not.
Oh, is that a fantasy of yours? That you had a different mother.
No, I did not.
Just curious.
I did not say that. But there's this wit and theatricality to the maternal figure that that is so alluring, and it's part of what makes her right. Because in reality, do you want Auntie Mame to be your mother? No,
no
right? But
no, she turns into that
movie.
Lady in
what
housekeeping.
Yeah. Talking about moms today on the State of Things.
My name is Arlene Sanders. I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. My favorite mom movie pick is Imitation of Life. First time I saw the movie, I was immediately taken about how two single parents, two moms of different races, were so dedicated to their respective daughters. I think I was about 9-10 years old, and I was living in a single guardian foster home situation. Imitation of Life shows the depth of love and sacrifices and hurt that a mother is willing to endure for the happiness and well-being of her child.
Are you happy here, honey? Are you finding what you really want?
I'm somebody else. I'm white. White. White! Does that answer you?
I guess so.
Then please, Mama, will you go? And never do this again. And if by accident we should ever pass on the street, please don't recognize me.
I won't, Sarah Jane. I promise. I settle all that in my mind. There's just one thing I wish from you.
What?
If you're ever in trouble, if you ever need anything at all, if you ever want to come home and you shouldn't be able to get in touch with me, will you let Miss Laura know?
Yes. Yes, anything. Now, will you go?
Thinking about the movie as a mother, it resonates with me even now because I'm thankful that my efforts as a mom have not so far resulted in being hurt by my daughter as much as this mom was hurt by hers.
1959 version of Imitation of Life.
Ooh, that is such a tear. I love, first off, Douglas Sirk is like the poet of the mother movie. this one, All That Heaven Allows. If you haven't seen a Sirk film, do yourself a favor and see this. But this one, this is a very powerful story about these two different women and what they do for their children, both of whom are pretty awful and hurt them incessantly over the course of the film. And it's just a kind of great story about single motherhood and trying to navigate that world, especially in the context of 1950s American culture.
Yeah. And there's an earlier version of this film from 1934 with Claudette Colbert and Louise Beavers that is much closer to the novel. But it's the same heartbreak and the same story of a girl passing for white and breaking her mother's heart. That's really an interesting subject that you don't see very much of in the movies.
There's this one scene where Juanita Moore, who plays Annie Johnson, comes to Sarah Jane's school to bring her lunch because she's forgotten it. And Sarah Jane's been passing for white in her school. And so this identifies her. And it's just this heartbreaking scene. So
talking about mothers today on Movies on the Radio. When we come back, one of the most unconventional mothers of all, the one who wasn't even in the film. We'll talk about Psycho on the State of Things, North Carolina Public Radio broadcast service of the University of North Carolina's Chapel Hill. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Today, Movies on the Radio, we're making our way through your picks, favorite films about mothers. Movie experts Laura Boies and Marcia Gordon join us. Marcia, a film professor at North Carolina State. Laura Boies, the film curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art. And, of course, you.
Hi, my name is Lee Dickens. I'm from Raleigh. And my mother film was Psycho. Psycho, to me, was the first art film I had ever seen, and it impressed me tremendously because not so much of what you did see, but what you didn't see. The mother, who was referred to as mother throughout the whole film, the mother was dominant in the film, but you never saw her. Her voice was dominant, her presence was dominant, but you never saw her.
No, I tell you, no. I won't have you bringing strange young girls in for supper. By candlelight, I suppose, in the cheap erotic fashion of young men with cheap erotic minds.
Mother, please.
And then what? After supper, music, whispers?
Mother, she's just a stranger. She's hungry and it's raining out.
Mother, she's just a stranger. As if men don't desire strangers. As if... Oh, I refuse to speak of disgusting things because they disgust me.
Mother, or Ms. Bates, put the ultimate guilt trip on Norman, and that was, to me, reflected in his behavior and in the guilt that he felt. It just, to me, the quintessential not mom.
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
Hi, Mom. Psycho.
Well, it occurs to me while I'm listening to this is there are so many times when you've listened to stories from your friends about how awful their parents are. And then you finally meet their parents and they're just a couple of harmless old people. Yeah. But the image that your friend has built up in their mind of all of the injustice and the pain and agony, it's not to say that it's not true, but just that it's not obvious from the outside.
Well, and there's this tradition of depicting these controlling, awful mothers. I mean, now Voyager is that way, and it's assigning this kind of blame. And so one path is the path where you are kind of imagining this acting on their behalf. And the other path, like in Now Voyager, is you break away and you become your own person. But that, I mean, it's a very cruel part of our cultural mythology. psychology.
We have Freud to thank for that.
Yes, right.
We have Freud to thank for the misinterpretation of that film, I think. I mean, because unlike now Voyager, we didn't really see the mom. We only saw the mom as interpreted through a mangled mind.
Right.
I mean, Norman is messed up, and who knows what else he's repressing that makes him turn his mother into the figure that we never saw her do that. We only saw his work.
You need someone to blame.
Well, I think it's his fault.
Well, and
the kid's blaming his mother, and the kid ought to take responsibility.
And I think there was this tension in 1950s American culture between the idea of the good, nurturing, kind of perfect mother, and then this kind of demonic mother who was destroying a generation of men by coddling them and being awful to them.
Well, there's other films where moms can't let go of their children. Let's listen to this.
This is Tom Patterson. I'm a writer in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. I want to talk about one of my favorite black comedies from the early 1970s, Where's Papa, which was directed by the great Carl Reiner, starring George Segal, plays a sort of failure of a defense attorney named Gordon Hochheiser. He lives in his New York apartment with his senile mother, Ruth Gordon. Ruth Gordon plays Gordon's aging mother. Her husband is long dead. She refers to him as Papa and is continually asking Gordon, "Where's Papa? Gordon, where's Papa?" And Gordon says, "Still dead." So Gordon is being driven crazy by his mother. The film opens with one of his many attempts to scare her to death or to somehow induce her death without actually, you know, literally being guilty of murder. So he puts a gorilla suit on. He goes into her bedroom early in the morning and jumps on her bed.
Oh, Gordon, you shouldn't do that. Always trying to cheer me up.
It's time to get up.
You almost scared me to death.
Almost doesn't count.
1970 comedy Where's Papa picks for the best movies for about moms.
Well, you know, at my age, this is like a nightmare. The whole issue of, you know, putting mama in the home, you know, it's everybody's terror because it's only a hair's breadth away than oneself being put in the home by one's own children.
Right.
So I look on this with almost as much horror as Psycho at this point.
But Ruth Gordon is so wonderful, right? I mean, that's the thing. What would we have done without Ruth Gordon in films like this and all the other amazing things she did? The tagline for this film is a man torn by his love for his mother and the urge to kill her. And I mean, I'm grateful for the black comedies that we'll talk about today because, you know, it's taking this serious thing. Like, what do you do? And it's giving us a little laughter about it, even if it's, you know, pretty morbid at times.
Here's another one.
Hi, my name is Sally Bloom, and I'm calling from Raleigh, and my movie pick is Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, which is a 1974 Martin Scorsese film. And I chose this movie. It resonated with me when I originally saw it because I was a young girl, and my parents had recently divorced, and it just reminded me of my mom, who was fiercely independent and dealing with the beginnings of feminism, and that Ellen Burstyn's performance is outstanding.
Look, Flo, I really don't need anybody making speeches for me, so I would appreciate it if you'd just leave me out of your jokes, okay?
Jokes? What jokes?
Well, the little routine you do for the fellas, just leave me out of it.
Well, honey, I sure would hate to have breakfast with you every morning of my life.
Don't have to worry, there's not much danger of that.
The sexism she encounters just, you know, is laughable, but unfortunately still here today. And I just think it's a bravo performance by everybody involved. And for that reason, I picked this movie.
1974 drama, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
You know, it's funny. You don't think of Scorsese and mothers necessarily, and yet his mother has made cameo appearances in so many of his films, and he clearly has this fascination. So it's very interesting to see him making a film that is so focused on a female-centric narrative. And, you know, this is a widow who's trying to figure out how to deal with her young son in addition to her own life. So it's really focused on how you navigate the world in this kind of adventurous way and trying to pursue your own dreams while also trying to raise your child on your own.
It's a funny movie, but it has a that 70s realism to it, right, that gives it a real immediacy, I think.
Like one of my other favorite movie films, which is not on the list for today, A Woman Under the Influence, the John Cassavetes film, which has that dark, difficult, also sense of humor, and knockout performance by Jenna Rollins.
Yeah, and coming as it does in 1974, it's certainly about motherhood as you watch this, again, widowed mother make her way through the world. But also, this was the time in which the phrase, the changing role of women, appeared in almost every, in almost every headline. And so that I think that's a key, sort of a theme and emphasis in this film is kind of, wait a minute, we need to think about this. What are we putting women through? Interesting, too, you remember the spinoff TV series, mm-hmm, Alice.
Yeah, I grew up with
which
that.
Really kind of took the whole other point of view. It really kind of glorified the sexism and there was not a lot of independence in that film. It was glorifying the things that the film itself was trying to play down.
Well, I think it did. It trivialized a lot of it.
Is a better word, yeah.
It was a sitcom.
It wasn't, complete
yeah, I mean, it,
laugh
it really,
track and...
Yeah.
Kiss My Grits.
Ellen Burstyn won an Oscar for her role as Alice in this thing.
She's
right?
Great.
She's dynamite in this.
All right, well, let's move on.
My name is Andrew Snee. I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina. Raising Arizona is one of my favorite mom movies because Holly Hunter is just so good in it. When she says, I just love him so much, I can't help but believe it. I saw it when I was a senior in high school, I think, when it came out. So I knew absolutely nothing about parenting. But as soon as I became a parent, I realized how true it all was. The anxiety of being a first-time parent and having a child and having that child entirely depend on you just comes through in the performances. I've only really recently realized that Frances McDormand is the other mother, the mother Dot, who gives the advice.
Then there's the diphtheria tetanus, what they call the dip-tet. You got to get them dip-tet boosters yearly or else we'll develop lockjaw and night vision. Then there's the smallpox vaccine, chicken pox, and measles. And if your kid's anything like ours, you're going to have to get all those shots yourself first before he'll ever take them. Who's your pediatrician anyway?
We ain't exactly fixed on one yet, have we, hi? No, I guess we don't have one yet.
Jesus, well, you got to have one. You got to have one this instant.
Yeah, well, what if the baby gets sick, honey?
Even if he don't get sick, he's got to have his dip tet.
He's got to have his dip tet, honey.
That's one of the best scenes in this movie when Dot and Glenn come to visit. And, their kids are awful. One of them is, shooting his water gun on Nicolas Cage's pants. And it's like, oh, he wet his pants. It's just like, why would these people want to have a child to the point that they steal the baby? There's this whole other part of the story. This is wonderful, wonderful film. I can't believe it's 30 years old.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That was 30
this
years
is
ago.
When the Coen brothers really burst out,
yes,
with their weird sense of humor and their really wonderful visual sense. And I'm reminded of another mother that Holly Hunter played in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou for the Coen brothers, where she didn't want George Clooney anymore because she had someone who was better. He's bona fide.
Nicolas Cage, also funny.
He's amazing.
Oh, my God. This is probably his best role by far.
Moonstruck?
This is better.
Uh-oh. Break him up.
This
break him
better.
Up. The only thing we can do now is play another clip.
My name is Sarah Bell, and I'm calling from Durham, North Carolina. And my pick this month is Housekeeping. It's a very underground film. It played at the Rialto when I worked there back in the late 1980s. And it's a film that's based on a book by Marilynne Robinson, and the book is just astoundingly beautiful. And it just turned out that the film came out almost as great as a film as the book is a book. And it stars Christine Lottie as a eccentric drifter, and she is summoned to a tiny remote mountain town where she grew up in Washington State to take care of her two little nieces, who actually are now teenagers. And they are kind of the antithesis of a 1950s family in this time, and that causes all kinds of trouble for the norms in this tiny little town.
When their mother didn't return home from her Sunday drive, Lucille and Ruthie thought it was strange. But they never knew how strange the family could be until Aunt Sylvie came to take care of them.
Sylvie!
Because Sylvie isn't like the rest of Fingerbone.
Sylvie!
Disaster doesn't upset her. public opinion doesn't bother.
Well, hello.
But the people of Fingerbone like people like themselves.
Do you hear anything from Mr. Fisher?
Who?
Your husband, dear.
Oh.
1987 film Housekeeping, movies on the radio, talking about your favorite mom movies with Marsha Gordon and Laura Boys.
Well, I loved this movie so much when it came out, and it has this little undercurrent of fear because there's a point at which the eccentricity clearly seems to be a kind of mental illness. It's not all, you know, lighthearted and kooky and fun.
So I had never heard of this film before. I don't understand why. So I saw it for the first time last week, and I loved this film. I don't know how I missed it, but this idea of this group of women basically living together, because these teenagers, I mean, they need mothering and they don't at the same time, but it's not idealized. It's incredibly unconventional. It's not just roses and wonderful. It's like all of these.
It's not anti-MAME.
Yeah, it is not anti-MAME. Exactly. But it is like the dialed back version of that, where this unconventional person comes to town and kind of takes over this role that she maybe didn't want, but she does the kind of the best she can given her situation. And I really love both the kind of mix of melancholy and delight that this film embodies.
Well, think about the various kinds of unconventional care. I mean, this is the 80s version of Mary Poppins in mm-hmm. some ways, right? I mean, there's a Mary Poppins, there's a Thousand Clowns, yeah. this part of it, which I think is closer to what you were saying, Laura, mm-hmm. the sense that it starts out as a charming relationship between a free thinker and the, you know, and his ward. And then you start to think, well, there's something wrong with that man. He really does need to be more careful.
Well,
with that child,
I actually watched that a week or two ago after you talked about it, and that was exactly what my feeling was.
You watched yeah. Mary Poppins?
No, A Thousand Clowns.
And
it seems like, what a fun guy. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, my God, run, lady, run as far as you can. Yeah.
I mean, the representational issue with so many mother characters, it's like they're either the controlling, strict, right. dutiful kind of mothers, or they're so eccentric that they're not being adequate in the mother department. And so, I mean, a lot of films take those two paths. And the aunt is an easy character to append eccentricities onto because it's not the mother.
Not really a mom.
This is Andrew Neal from Hillsborough. I'm talking about Dead Alive. In 1993, I had one of the best movie experiences I've ever had in Chapel Hill's Carolina Theater at a midnight showing of Peter Jackson's Dead Alive. If you only know Peter Jackson from his Lord of the Rings movies, here's a breakdown. The main character, Lionel, lives with his exceptionally controlling mother, Vera. Vera attracts Lionel, who's on a clandestine date with his love interest, Paquita, to the zoo, where she's bitten by a Sumatran rat monkey, which turns her into a zombie.
Mom!
Lionel attempts to take care of Vera and other folks she infects as though she were merely sick, which leads to some of the most disgusting and hilarious scenes I've ever seen in a movie, not to mention some of the most Freudian. Does Lionel ever crawl out from under his mother's undead thumb? I recommend you watch the movie to find out, but be aware, when I saw it in the theater all those years ago, I both laughed until I was hoarse and nearly threw up.
Wow, what a great pull quote.
I love
1992.
It. You know, I have not seen this film. I didn't know that this film existed. It sounds wacky and interesting, and it's always, I think, useful to see early films by directors who are now so prominent and big and have identities that are so far away from like the early works like this.
Well, Peter Jackson's next movie was Heavenly Creatures, which is about two teenage girls, one of whom hates her mother.
Yes.
And they contrive to, she and her best friend contrive to murder her. And
was that more realistic? Because one of the things I noticed in this is that you can play these a couple of ways. One is the absolute wacky, almost slapstick version of this, right?
Right.
The other is the horror, kind of psychological horror in Psycho, or you can have a more subtle kind of a drama.
Well, Heavenly Creatures had a very intense fantasy life,
yes.
that involved Mario Lanza and Orson Welles, and there was like stop motion puppetry.
Doesn't everyone's fantasy life involve Mario Lanza and Orson Welles?
I mean, people have unique fixations, so that there was like a melding of this intense fantasy life with the plotting of A true life crime, actually.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking about Rosemary's Baby, which was mentioned a bunch of times by listeners and which didn't get picked for the show, which is another great version of the horror mother movie, which brings together this really realist and then this super absurdist horror element.
You talked about, Marcia, the fact that you hadn't seen it. This film, Dead Alive, which was originally called Brain Dead, I think. It had a name change. But anyway, it swept the New Zealand Film and TV Awards. So New Zealand, big deal. Do we know, Laura, do you happen to know if it played well here in the United States?
I assume it was like a midnight movie kind of thing.
Yeah.
Seems like it could have been a cult film.
Kind of a cult film. Well, we're going to take a break here, and in just a second we're going to come back and talk about mom movies. But I should tell you that next month we will talk about cult classics, films that you considered a cult. And so if you're interested in joining us next month on Movies on the Radio to talk about cult films, you can send us an email at stateofthings@wnc.org. And you can also tweet at us, and that's an easy enough thing to find if you want to join us next month. But we're not done yet. Oh, no, we're still talking about your mother on The State of Things. Marcia Gordon, film professor at North Carolina State. Laura Boyes, film curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art. Movies on the Radio is still happening. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Mother's Day just passed. Too late. You missed it. If you didn't send the card, forget it. She's already...
Too late,
no, because she's not going to accept it. Don't you think? But we're doing... doing movies. Movies on the Radio today about mothers.
Hi, my name is Robin Lung. I'm from Kailua on the island of Oahu, which is in Hawaii. And one of the best mother movies I've seen is Joy Luck Club. And Joy Luck Club features four mothers, and they're all Chinese. And one of the great things about it is that I'm of also Chinese ethnicity, and I identified a lot with the story because, you know, it's telling a story of Chinese American mothers. And there are four daughters involved in the story, too. So I kind of identified actually through the daughters.
This is what I wanted to show you. You know, Rich, the guy I told you about? I don't know why he got it for me. It's really never cold enough to wear. You want to try it?
This not so good. Only leftover strips. See? Fur too short. No long hairs.
How can you criticize a gift? He gave this to me with all his heart.
That's why I told you. Not so good.
This movie helped me understand, you know, why we have generational disconnects and how we can move past that to become closer to each other.
From the 1993 film, The Joy Luck Club.
And this was based on this Amy Tan novel of the same name, which I remember reading in college and loving, and I was so glad when a film version was being made of it. And that story of cultural generational conflict, it's such an important one, and it can be told in a lot of different ways, but this film was really unique in telling it through the lens of this Chinese-American context.
It reminds me on... Master of None, there's an episode where the two characters are talking about the distance from their immigrant parents and how it's so hard to relate to them. And a Chinese-American young man says, my father used to drink out of a river, and now he has a car that talks to him. So it's a way of, you know, visualizing that you can't really understand the experiences that the previous generations have had. And yet it informs everything you do, but yet it's always going to remain somewhat of a mystery.
And in this case, I think the acting in this is something that really does bring to life one of the themes in the book, which is this, that it's more than just a look, I'm over here, I'm from the old country, here's how we act. There's a real self-consciousness about wanting to preserve in the mother's performance that is more than just embodying who she is, but a kind of, you can almost tell in her acting, in the theatricality of her performance, I need you to understand this about me. It's more than just this is who I am. And I thought that's in some ways what a film can do that the book couldn't, although I suppose if you're a sharp reader, you'd pick it up.
Well, and I think there's that tension, too, that this plays out, which is not just that, you know, as a young person, you're trying to differentiate yourself from your parents. But in this case, there's also this whole cultural context of Chinese culture versus Chinese American culture. And so it's this kind of second layer.
Because it's a really deep and a kind of a representational form of film. And then there's this.
My name is Leslie Burns. I'm from Charleston, South Carolina. And my movie is Serial Mom. I adore it because I'm a huge John Waters fan. But also Kathleen Turner, to see her in this role that's truly has the same places of interest that come from being a mother. She truly wants to like look out for her children. But she is so absolutely insane that she kills these people, and it's gory, and it's beautiful, and it's brilliant. I adore it.
Good morning, Miss Sutton.
Good morning, guys. Good morning, Sophie. You know, you boys work so hard for the environment, I thought I'd bring you something. A little drink never hurt anybody.
Thank you, ma'am. You believe that, litterbugger?
Oh, I have told her and told her. It takes 90 to 100 years for a tin can to decompose, and she still won't recycle.
Cost the taxpayers millions of dollars last year, but she don't care nothing about the national budget.
I hate Mrs. Ackerman.
I hate her, too.
I hate her guts. You know, somebody ought to kill her.
Yeah. Give her a happy face, and then recycle her.
For the sake of this planet, somebody just might.
1994 comedy Serial Mom, Kathleen Turner.
Well, it's the poison of that kind of perfect domesticity that women have been shoehorned into by society for so long, and this is the most extreme reaction to it.
I love this film. I haven't seen it in a while, but the repressed kind of aspects of suburban life, yeah, that this character, you know, someone hurts my child, well, guess what? I'm hurting them back. I mean, so it's just taking right. that as Leslie said, that idea of what kind of might be kind of normal reactions, and then it's turning it up, you know, a few right. degrees by actually acting out all of the vengeful, awful things that people think.
Yeah, and getting going right to murder. It's not just, well, but quintessentially John Waters, too, right? I mean, this is
right.
sort of
yeah, during this more kind of mainstream phase
of
his
post-Hairspray glow yeah. kind of thing.
Right, but still with that sort of wacky and this edgy
because
look.
Because he
at
is
suburbs,
who he is.
At the burbs, yeah. So how did this film do? 1994. I don't remember the name.
I don't remember how it did, although I did look up the New York Times review because I was curious how the New York Times, you know, treated a film like this. And the review read, if you're going to build a career on bad taste, sooner or later you'll have to tackle the most sacred icon of all, motherhood, and John Waters is just the man to do it. So that sounds like a critical embrace as far as I'm concerned.
Laura, you found a way to bring Bollywood back
help myself. So one of the things that I love about Bollywood movies is that everybody has parents. Gangsters have parents. Policemen have parents. Romantic couples have parents. And after you watch a lot of Bollywood movies, people in mainstream movies start to look like orphans. It's like, why do they never recall yeah. their mothers? Why do they never have these other kinds of family interactions? So I picked a particular movie that's a very famous one, and I'm going to mangle the pronunciation, but it's Dilwale Dulhania Le Jayenge from 1995. It's a romantic movie in which Kajol falls in love with Shah Rukh Khan, and her parents are not on board with it.
Well, here's a song from the aforementioned film.
Tujhe dekha to ye jana sanam, pyar hota hai deewana sanam. Tujhe dekha to ye jana sanam, pyar hota hai deewana sanam. Ab yahan se kahan jaye hum, teri baahon mein mar jaye hum.
There we go, a clip from the 1995 Bollywood film Diwali.
DDLJ, yes. DDLJ. So the mother is played by Farida Jalal, and she has an amazing speech because so far she just seemed to be, you know, sort of a general kind of a mom person. Kajol's father is played by Amrish Puri, who plays the evil high priest in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. So he's like a super scary father figure. And her mother sits down with her talking about how she she's going to have to marry the boy that her father has picked out, and about how she was always told that boys and girls were equal, that they should be treated the same. But as she's been a daughter, a wife, and a mother, she realizes that you have to sacrifice. She made a vow that when her daughter grew up, she would not have to make the same kind of sacrifices that she said. And she said, she says, I know that's never going to be true. And I, your mother, come to take from you your happiness. Forget the man you love. Your father won't care for your tears. And all of a sudden, a role in which has seemed like a cliche, her entire life of compromise and misery comes out. And it's an extremely touching moment. They cry in each other's arms. And then, fortunately, things do work out at the
end.
Well, I was going to say, and then 10,000 dancers in very sparkly outfits just burst onto the scene and made everybody happy.
Not right away. Okay, there's a little bit of a segue.
There's a tactful pause.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we necessarily have an English language bias on the show because of our use of clips. But I did want to just at least mention, to me, a filmmaker who has the most sensitive compassionate representation of women in general and mothers in particular, and that's Pedro Almodovar. And many people mentioned All About My Mother, which is a masterpiece, wonderful film about mothers, but you're going to have to read subtitles unless you are fluent.
Oh, we do have one foreign film. Here it goes.
This is Kim Hesse calling in from Elm City, North Carolina. My pick of movies is Antonia's Line. I've seen this movie probably 20 times. It's my absolute all-time favorite because it's a very heartfelt movie about a very strong woman who is a single mother. A woman who becomes pregnant when she's younger in the age and time where it's not acceptable to be a single mother. And she raises her daughter on her own. When the daughter's older, she comes back to her village and starts basically taking in all of the people that are forgotten. There's a young girl who's abused, and she goes and saves that girl. She takes in some of the people that are mentally disabled. And her whole house becomes a home for everybody who needs a little extra attention and love. And it's just a very, very heartfelt, warm movie.
And the movie is Antonia's Line from 1995, which was an Oscar winner for Best Foreign Film. Tell us more about it.
Well, I think it's important. Well, Marlene Gorris is from the Netherlands. She's a very interesting filmmaker. But I think it's important to note that this is about deliberate single motherhood. It's not just in some of these films, it's like the husband dies or leaves and the women are left to pick up the pieces. But in this case, it's imagining a deliberately male-free universe, and it's a utopia. And it's, I think when it came out, there tended to be a reaction of either this is amazing or this is, too overt feminist, and some people kind of balked at it. But I think it's a very interesting film.
I'm looking at this list, and there are very few films in this list that have married couples in them. They're often about single parenting.
Yeah, but as you say, this is an intentional community. A lot of jokes about what do we need men for? It's like, do we need the men? And it's a terrific
always film. A pertinent question.
Okay, I'm leaving. Right now. You finish the show, but not before we play this.
Hi, my name is Kim. I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina, and my pick is Mother, the Albert Brooks film. So I remember seeing this film at home. We rented it, and my brother and I could only laugh about how we had been criticizing our mom for freezing cheese, just like he does in the movie.
You want some cheese?
No, the salad is fine, I promise.
Oh. I'm going to give you some cheese.
That's a lot of cheese.
Got it in hunks.
Mother, look at the date. It's 3 years old.
Well, it's been in the freezer.
Yeah, but how cheap was it that you wanted to buy this much of it?
Honey, this is wonderful cheese. It comes from Switzerland. Very hard to get.
How could it be hard to get? It's all here. I don't want the cheese.
Now, dear.
Mother, stop. I don't want any. Stop. Like this old house.
Well, I haven't even tried it.
I can tell by the gross weight I'm not going to like it. I like my cheeses in the ounces. When they weigh as much as a Fiat, I get worried.
It really shines a light back at you as to how much kids criticize their parents and how much they find fault in them when they're full of the same problems, the same quirkiness later in life, too.
1996 film Mother with Albert Brooks.
Well, we will all turn into our parents. It's happening. Part of the whole freezer thing is that everything is saved under a layer of protective ice. And that's something that we brought away from that movie. So we take something out of the freezer. Oh, it's got the protective ice. It's all right.
Well, I mean, this is an Albert Brooks film. And I would say if you're an Albert Brooks fan, this is very much in the Albert Brooks vein. Mm-hmm. And Debbie Reynolds, of course, plays the mother. I don't know if that was mentioned or not.
I think she came out of retirement to do it. She had not been doing that much acting.
She wields a great electric knife when it comes to cutting the cheese. So, hey, this next film, I bet you didn't watch this, Laura. I bet you didn't, because it includes eye surgery.
Exactly.
My movie pick for this mother theme is a 2016 Sundance black and white horror film called The Eyes of My Mother. It was directed by Nicholas Pesch. It was his debut film. It's the haunting tale of a young woman, Francisca, who becomes unhinged over the death of her mother, who had been a prominent Portuguese surgeon.
I don't do this very often.
Do what?
Go home with people.
Neither do I.
Your house is so neat.
Thank you.
Is this your mother?
Yes.
What did she do?
She was a surgeon in Portugal.
What kind?
Eyes. We used to do the sections together.
What happened to her?
The reviews and reaction to the film, which is now available on Netflix, were mixed. I'm told that some people ran out of the theater in Park City. But it currently scored a very respectable 75% on Rotten Tomatoes. And whatever the critics thought of the film overall at the time, most were agreed on the stark and crisp beauty of the black and white images and of its overall look and design. And here's where my particular interest comes in. The production designer for the film was my son, Sam Hansen, who graduated from Durham School of the Arts in 2006. The sort of ironic twist to this mother theme is that unfortunately, most of Sam's films are things that his mother will never see, given her aversion to horror movies. And we keep hoping that he'll make something that she can see.
Wow. Laura, by the way, was hiding under the desk in the studio until that Durham comment, and then
she
came out.
DSA shout out. I'm all about that.
under a layer of protective ice.
That is how I watched the trailer.
Or was it eyes?
I didn't see this film. I'm sorry to report.
You can't see it all the way through.
I
always thought, you know, if you take that kind of that cadence in this, you know, in the clip that we played with those two women talking together, they could be speaking any language with that music and that cadence, and you would run out of
it's
the
super scary.
You know that somebody's about to be slashed.
But you know, I did want to mention one thing. Do we have time for a quick one?
Yep.
So I just started watching the Hulu Handmaid's Tale with Elizabeth Moss, which is of course based on the Margaret Atwood book and is all about reproductive rights and having them taken away from you. And it's in a really intense, stressful, wonderful, interesting exploration of motherhood in a dystopian universe that seems somewhat resonant with parts of our current culture.
Cult classics is the next theme on the state of things and movies on the radio, WNC, SOT at WNC.org if you want to send us an email and be part of the fun to tell us about your favorite cult classic. As always, Marcia Gordon, Laura Boies, thank you so much for being on the show.
They say hello to your mother for me, Frank.
Hi, Mom. Marcia Gordon, film professor at NC State. Laura Boies, film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art, North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Rita Stacio's son.